I would definitely put it in the top 10.
It's so good.
A lot more thought has gone into the story.
I think it's awesome.
This is a spy movie disguised as a superhero movie.
There's such clear-cut good and bad.
It's definitely got some horrific elements.
Well, once we go there, you're just going to throw physics out the window.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
This is like the Fast Times at Ridgemont High of the fantasy world. Yep. Wow. That was something else. Now, kids, your homework tonight is to go home and watch this on television.
At that point in the script, you're actually rooting for her.
And I am just giggling maniacally through the whole thing.
When slashers came home.
I love that they just throw you in there and say, okay, find your way out. A lot of people don't like horror movies.
It's a coming of age, not a horror movie.
But I still love it because it's a slice of life, and I'm okay with that. Tim really wants to like this movie.
I loved the production design.
I wanted more from this movie.
Your reality is not what you think it is.
Oh my God, am I destroying our podcast?
It's the kind of house they don't build anymore. A relic of a time when the world wasn't in such a hurry. When there was still time for a little charm and elegance. It has stood empty for a long while. And at the price, it is a bargain. For a growing young family, it is almost too good to be true.
What do you think?
I love it.
James Brolin, Margot Kidder, Rod Steiger, in the Amityville Horror.
God's peace in this house.
Eight days after the Lutz family moved into their dream house, they were running for their lives. What happened to them is an experience in terror you will never forget, and you will believe in the Amityville Horror.
Hello, hello, welcome, and Merry Christmas out there to everybody. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, a podcast and YouTube channel where two guys talk about science fiction and horror films, television, literature, all sorts of things, key influences on the topic of the week, and then things that that topic may have influenced going forward if it's an older film or television or something like that. We've been doing it for quite a long time. If you're new to us, we would love to hear how you found out about us and what you think and everything else. Leave a comment down below, as they say. And of course, you can feel free to subscribe, ring the bell, do all those things to follow us and let us get to know you a little bit better. If you're returning, yay, welcome. You've done this before, so you know the shtick, and it's usually the same. My name is David. I'm here with my good friend Tim. Tim, we usually start with a little, what have you been doing this week in genre, in your genre?
What have I been doing this week? I've been Christmas shopping, David. What about you?
Of course you have. Yeah, me, no, hell no. I don't start
well,
for another
you
week.
You have 10 shopping days left. Actually, okay. Only 9 because it's 10 days until Christmas. So
well, that gives me 8, then I'm okay. Good.
Oh, my gosh. What have I been doing in my genre week?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I watched something very new. So new that I actually had to pay to see it.
Okay.
And it's a movie that came out earlier this year called Bring Her Back.
Bring Her Back. Okay.
This movie is fucked up.
Okay.
In a good way.
Okay.
It's from the Filippo or Pooh brothers. They are the Australian brothers that brought us Talk to Me.
A
year or so back. Yeah. Once you watch this movie, you realize that it's going to be a lot like Talk to Me. You're not into it very long before you realize this is not going to end happy.
Some evil things happen. Yes.
Very, very fucked up. But okay. It is also totally original. I've never seen anything like it before as far as story and plot.
Okay.
Again, I mentioned it's directed by the Filippo brothers. It's written by Danny Filippo and I'm probably butchering that name, and Bill Hinesman. And I went, wait a minute, that's the guy from Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
But Apparently, there's an Australian named Bill Hinesman that's much younger and a frequent collaborator with these brothers. It's not the same guy.
Okay.
The cast is strong. It's mostly Australian actors, mostly kids. However, it features British actress Sally Hawkins, who is simply unforgettable in this role. Hmm.
Okay.
We know her from Del Toro's The Shape of Water, where she played the mute lead in it.
Okay.
But like I said, the other three kids that are in this are fantastic. A synopsis is, and this is a very brief synopsis, is a brother and sister uncover a terrifying ritual at the secluded home of their new foster mother. I'm not going to give anything else away. I will say that it gets 89% on Rotten Tomatoes with 253 reviews, and I'm okay with that. I would probably even bump it a little higher. I want to see it again. I had to go back and read the synopsis on Wiki to answer some questions that I had, and I want to go see if I maybe missed hearing something.
Okay.
Well, the reason is there's a lot to do with an old staticky videotape that's Russian. So it's a tad confusing when they show clips from that tape because it's in another language, but you're witnessing stuff and you're like, what the hell? But you know how jaded I am. Nothing bothers me in horror movies. Yeah. There's some stuff in this movie that had me cringing and shouting at the television.
Really?
So, yeah. I loved it. Probably more than Talk to Me.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I highly recommend it, folks. So if you need some Christmas horror, there you go. Bring her back.
Well, and I have seen Talk to Me, and it is very scary. So very interesting that this one is even better, that these guys, good. They're doing a good job then in their genre. Yeah. I stuck to my genre as well because I went back to my list, which is constantly getting longer, but I wanted to look up one that people were saying one of the best science fiction films of the decade, and it won all these awards, and it won a Saturn Award and all this, and I'd never seen it or heard of it. I mean, I'd heard of it vaguely, but never seen it. But it was a film that came out in 2013 called Coherence.
I've heard of it.
It's very interesting. It's written and directed by James Ward Burkett. He went on to do stuff like Rango, the Pixar movie, or the DreamWorks movie with about the iguana or the chameleon, the animated one. And he's worked on all of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. The basic plot is a group of friends are getting together just for a dinner party. And they've been friends forever, like some of them for a couple of decades, like since high school sort of thing. And they're all in their 30s, 40s, in that age range. A couple of them are older, but are still part of the clique and the group. And they're all getting together to have a dinner party. It just so happens this is also the night when this comet is passing really close to the Earth. And so a lot of people are having like comet sighting parties because you'll be able to actually see it at night. And that's kind of why they all got together. But things start getting really weird and odd things start happening, and it is basically a multi-dimensional timeline sort of huge twists and turns story that gets really, really elaborate and really crazy by the end of it.
There's zombies, are there?
No zombies, but without giving anything really away because it might tease you. And I think you would like this movie. At one point, they end up going outside, all the power's out. And the power's out in the whole neighborhood, and they can't see any power in town that they know of. Their phones are all off. But not only are their phones off, but two of their phones literally just shatter for no reason. They just break. And anyway, so they decide, well, let's go to a neighbor's house and see if, you know, if their power's out too, or if we can help them, whatever. They go over there and look in, all seven of them. No. Two of them stay. So five, there's seven altogether. So five go over to the neighbor's house. And inside, they see seven people having a dinner party. And they look around, and it's them in the other house across the street having a dinner party. So They freak out, run back, everything else. And then it just builds from there.
That reminds me of Channel Zero. That's just really weird stuff.
Okay. It gets really cool. It gets really interesting. But the thing I loved about it most, I started watching it and I was going, okay, this is just very, it's very interesting the way it's shot. It looks, it doesn't look like found footage, but it's very tightly edited and basically takes place in this one living room and kitchen. That's it. Okay. That's the whole, except when they go outside, but even then it's dark. So you don't really see anything.
It better be interesting then, or it could get boring really quick.
Right. And it does. It stays very interesting. It found okay. out it's because the guy wrote it and came up with the idea of something he and his friends could shoot together. Yeah. And he shot it in his living room of his house, and they shot it over 5 nights.
Okay.
But it's all improvised. He would just give each of them every night, he would give each of them like a card that had like 6 bullet points of before the end of this scene, the scenes we're doing tonight, your character needs to hit these 6 points in improv and or dialogue and or whatever.
That's very Christopher Guest.
And so it's, yeah, and it feels really organic and really interesting and really good. The only actor you would recognize in it at all that I recognize, I don't know if you would, but is Nicholas Brendon, who was in Buffy. He was Xander in Buffy.
Yeah.
And he's really, really good in this. And the rest of them are really good. You know how sometimes you've seen those failed experiments where they're trying to do something and they're not really good at improv and it shows and they're none of that is this. This is very realistic looking. Their reactions are realistic. It's really an interesting film. I highly recommend it. Called Coherence. Came out in 13.
It sounds like a game we would have played back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Where we'd get together and it's going to be an end of the world scenario.
Yep.
And it's like a D&D or top secret type thing. And this is what's going to happen. Except I would throw zombies in it.
It does sort of fall apart in the third act.
Okay.
It gets into some weird motivations and some stuff. I think just because, I have to end it somehow sort of thing is the feel of it. But it was good. I recommend it to any science fiction fans out there. Coherence.
Okay. Yep. Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, you talked about people that are confined to a house, and I talked about something that was terrifying and scary. And our topic for this Christmas episode is neither of those. Well, actually, some people are in a house, but it's not very scary. We're talking about a very sensational, as far as sensationalistic, is that the word? Sensationalized story, I guess you would say, from 1979, and that is The Amityville Horror.
Cue the children's chorus music. Yes.
There you go. Before I get into my history with this movie and the history of this movie, I do want to give a brief synopsis. It is based on a best-selling book. Basically, the Lutzes are a family. It's a man, a wife, and how many kids?
Three.
Move into what seems like a bargain of a house, this big, beautiful house on like in Nantucket or whatever. Well, it's Amityville, but it's up in New England. And it is the house where a murder was committed prior to their living there. A guy at 3 a.m. or 3:15 a.m. gets up and basically kills his entire family with a shotgun. So they move into the house and weird things start happening. Imagine that. At one point, they're out on the lake and their friendly neighborhood priest comes by and he gets violently ill and basically chased out of the house by something that you don't see. And then, well, scary things happen. The father starts becoming possessed and starting to actually resemble the guy that committed the murders that lived there prior. And there's suggestion that he might do the same thing and kill his family. And then eventually, in less than a month, all hell breaks loose. And they basically leave the house and all their possessions there. And that's the end. So that's the story. And the book is very similar. But before we move on to the history in the book, what was your history with this movie?
Oh, I saw it in the theater because I had read the book.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I had read the book. I had the cover with the flies on it. Mm-hmm. And I wholeheartedly believed in it. I thought this was before any even suggestion of a hoax came out. And I believed the book. I even at the time went and read a little bit about DeFeo, the family that was there before. Ronald DeFeo Jr. was the murderer. And I bought into it hook, line, and sinker. And then
I did too.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say is that the book, to me, I bought into hook, line, and sinker. The movie, to me, wasn't that good, even the first time I saw it.
Agreed. I didn't think it was as scary as it could have been.
No, I didn't think it was scary at all.
I don't think it touched on any of the things that were really creepy to me about the in the book. You know, the Red Room is just glossed over in this, the whole thing with Jody and the pig best friend,
the Christmas tree lights.
Yeah. There's so much stuff that I think could have been, even then, back in, when did this come out? 79, 77?
It came out in 79. And now knowing what we know when we do research on these movies, I kind of understand why it's not a success. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize it was an AIP movie. I had no idea Samuel Arkoff did this movie. And I was like, well, that's on the cheap right there.
Yeah.
And the effects, like you said, the Jody the pig effect is horrible. The effect of when they look into the Red Room and you see that Star Trek vision or whatever of James Brolin's head on the wall is just stupid.
They don't know. This director, Stuart Rosenberg, I don't think had ever done a horror movie.
Nope.
I got the impression, and nor should he ever attempt it again. He just didn't play up the scares right. He didn't do it the way it should have been. The music was great. I thought the music worked really well. I thought he gave the house a little bit of a presence, just like it had in the, you know, the posters and pictures in the book and everything else. But everything is done like a bad TV movie, especially the audio mixing. There's every time it lightning, it's kind of like they shot it and they had the big arc light to do the lightning. And whoever was editing it all together said, okay, every time you see lightning, add thunder. And it's like lightning, a storm doesn't work that way. That's why it feels so unusual. It's like it's happening at exactly the same time all the time. And it's over and over and over again. And it's the same thunderclap. 10 times in the movie.
It's that Wilhelm scream.
Yeah, it's like the Wilhelm scream sort of thing. Yeah. And I thought that they just didn't, it didn't tell a haunted house story well at all.
No.
But the book's not, once you, if going back, I reread a couple, in doing research, I reread a couple of sections of the book and went, you know, it's not really that well written either.
It's not. Like, it was a sensation. My mother put that book into my hand. My mother used to put scary books into my hands if she read them. And she read that and said, you need to read this. This is true. And I was like, oh, wow. And we bought into it. That's why the book was so great, was because we all thought it was true.
Yeah, it was like In Cold Blood. I thought it was going to be an In Cold Blood thing, you know, which it really was similar. That's one of my keys, is that the book touted itself as this totally factual, true story of murder and then haunting. And yet it's not. But as far as influences go, everybody knows the name Amityville.
Right.
And there have been like 75 freaking sequels to it.
There's only been so many sequels, but there are 30-something, I've got it in my notes somewhere, 30-something movies with the word Amityville in the title now.
Yeah. Crazy.
You mentioned In Cold Blood, which is a decent key, but it was also written by an incredible writer. Truman Capote is a much better writer than Jay Anson, who wrote the Amityville Horror.
Oh, yes. By far. Definitely.
But yeah, so we all believed it was true. And I got to thinking about this in the shower this morning, as I do. And I was like, there was no internet. So when the fake, when this was revealed to be a hoax, I didn't find out about it right away. I found out years later. This was a hoax. None of it was real. But it pretty much happened shortly after, I think, the book and the movie came out.
I think so. I think by 80 or 81.
Yeah.
They had had interviews with Lutz saying that parts of it were fabricated.
Right. And I didn't find that out until like the mid or late 80s. So I was still thinking, oh, this is true, but the movie's just not that good.
And I don't know if it's a money grab or not, but you can go online now and there's like a documentary with the son, the youngest son, who's now in his like 50s, of course.
I have watched the first 30 minutes of that.
And again, I'm not saying it was a power grab or a money grab or not, but he wholeheartedly says things happened in the house. But he's mostly blaming his very, very abusive stepfather. But he's also saying that there were things in the house that have traumatized him for the rest of his life. Sort of thing.
I just wonder if all that was more impression than actuality.
Right. And it could have been.
Yeah.
We were very impressionable back in the late 70s.
Right. Obviously, all of America was impressed by this.
Yeah.
I've got some background on it. You mentioned Stuart Rosenberg. He was not a horror movie director. He did Cool Hand Luke, Brubaker, and The Pope of Greenwich Village, which are all guy movies, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they're not anywhere near a horror movie. He did direct five actors to Oscar nominations, including, Peter Falk, Paul Newman, George Kennedy, Lee Grant, and Geraldine Page for mostly those movies that I just mentioned. His students included Darren Aronofsky, Todd Field, Mark Waters, Scott Silver, Doug Ellen, and Rob Schmidt. Now, I know who Darren Aronofsky is, so that was impressive. So I guess he was a teacher as well.
Probably.
I will say, I don't think the fault of this movie is on the cast. I think the cast is pretty good.
Well, I do too. I think Brolin, although he is shot very overacting
and terrible makeup. Yeah.
They do those zoom ins on close ups on him. Mm-hmm. They don't let him really have a chance to emote in the scene. They suddenly cut to him for a reaction shot sort of thing. But I think he's very good. I think Margot Kidder's really strong in this.
Oh, and so is Rod Steiger.
Can't do any wrong.
You know?
These are flies. No, or whatever, but you know.
The writer was Sandor Stern. I've got that he just wrote mostly television. And and it's based on the book by Jay Anson and George and Kathy Lutz. I've got, "For God's sake, get out," which was their famous tagline.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally planned to be a made-for-television production for CBS until Samuel Arkoff, who I mentioned earlier, bought the rights after reading the book. It grossed $7.8 million domestically in its opening weekend, the most of any R-rated film, surpassing The Exorcist 2 with $6.7 million. The record was broken the following year by Stir Crazy. With Gene Hackman and Richard Pryor. At the conclusion of its theatrical run, the film had grossed $86 million in U.S. and Canadian box office. Now, that's huge for 1979. It was the highest grossing film of 79 after Kramer versus Kramer.
Yeah, it was a sensation. I remember it stayed at the theaters a long time. I remember those windows in that house were terrifying. They creeped people out. People didn't like it. The image alone of the walls bleeding, that was a really smart choice because that was creepy.
But in the book, it was black sludge. It was not blood, was it?
Correct.
It was the same stuff that was coming out of the toilet that was coming out of the walls.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Other background, definitely the highest grossing independent film and American International Pictures' biggest hit. Mm. And then I'm not going to read this verbatim, but there's the whole story of the attorney, William Weber, who filed a lawsuit against the Lutzes, charging them fraud and breach of contract. And they reneged on an agreement to collaborate with him on the book. joke. So I think that's how the story finally leaked out, that it was fake, is because they decided to grab all the money and not include him in it.
Yes. And I'm okay. And I'm sure that's exactly what happened. What I understand mm-hmm. from my research is, yeah, that he collaborated and they took notes and a bunch of cassette recording or reel-to-reel recordings of Lutz and his wife talking about what happened since the time, since the day they moved in. Mm-hmm. And the attorney was then going to take all of that and compile it into the screenplay or the story for the book. And instead, they took it to Anson, who offered them a lot more money for it. And they basically gave him the tapes for a week, and he came back with all the ideas. And so the attorney got pissed that he wasn't cut in on the deal.
Okay. And that's how it all got exposed.
Yeah. And it's very convoluted. All the research I did, it's still very – obviously, something happened in the house. In other words, I do not buy into the real shaming fraud part where all of this was made up, where they intentionally did all of this and moved in and then moved out and left all their stuff there and everything on purpose. I think something happened. I just don't know if it was as purported as the book and definitely not as inflated as the movie.
Well, I think they painted that room red, unless it was really red and they found it.
I think they did find it. In my opinion.
Okay.
Again, because it's he said, she said. Nobody has proof of anything right. One way or the other. I do know that other people have moved into the house and not had hauntings. So there's that. But even the myth of Amityville itself or the house has all the, you know, people have said it's an Indian burial ground. People have said it's an Indian hospital. People have said that it was a satanic, you know, the movie purports that it was a satanic church or a guy there who was a Satanist and had rituals there and everything. So there's a lot of, we don't know what the real facts are, sort of thing.
Right. What about scenes? There are some iconic scenes in the movie for sure.
Well, yeah. Well, the flies scene is one of the, I think, the best or the most, to me, it could have potentially the scariest or at least the creepiest feeling.
Well, and Steiger's in it, and he's the best actor, too.
Yeah, really good in that scene, having to do that with no dialogue. Mm-hmm. Show the gradual paranoia sort of thing. However, that entire scene could have been easily cut from The Exorcist. Sort of thing. It looks just like an exorcist kind of moment.
Kind of. Sort of thing. He's still got good retching.
Mm-hmm.
he looks like he's really throwing up.
I like the dog going to the basement scene. That gave me the creeps, you know, and bothered me. The dog constantly digging at the wall.
Digging at the stone wall. Yes, mm-hmm. I agree. I've got a scene that I miss.
Mm-hmm.
One of the scenes in the book that played on me really strongly was the Chinese lion statue on the hearth, and it literally bites George, and they don't really show that. They just show that it fell on his leg or whatever and put those imprints on him. They don't really insinuate that it – yes, exactly, and you don't get the fact that it actually bit him like you do in the book.
Well, I think if I remember right, too, in the book, it moves from room to room, too.
I think so.
It's in different rooms. Like, it's in the hallway at one point, and it's in the bedroom at one point, and all that, and nobody remembers moving it. So, yeah, that could have been a cool ad if they'd done it.
Yeah.
I like the way they did the flashbacks and the killings and stuff.
Yes.
I would have liked to have seen more of that. I think when she goes and does all the research, they should have had a little bit longer scene of what actually happened sort of thing.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I like the scene with Margot Kidder and the daughter and Jody in the empty rocking chair. That, to me, is more effective than when they show the stupid lights outside the window that are supposed to be its eyes. Yeah, it's terrible. It's just... It's better to leave it to your imagination by not showing you anything than to show you something cheap and stupid.
And to show you stuff like it rocking and then she comes to the door and it suddenly stops.
Yes.
You know, sort of thing. That is good. That's good. Mm-hmm. We know from last week and the Changeling that an inanimate object moving can be really scary if done right. I did like the music and the theme itself. The kids, you know, creepy sound is really good. And the walls bleeding. Again, I like the walls bleeding.
I like that George goes back for the dog at the end. I'm pretty sure that happens in the book, but I think it's wild what all he goes through to get the dog. He falls into that pit of goo.
Yeah. And none of that is explained. It is such an abrupt ending. It's like, we're done.
It's like The Conjuring. Doesn't he fall through a couple of floors and then into the pit? So he's not got a single broken bone, but he still manages to crawl out. No, the dog helps pull
him out. The dog helps him out. Yeah.
Like Lassie. And then he carries the dog down the street. And the kids and the wife are all happy in the truck because he made it.
What? Daddy fell in a bucket of ooze? Okay.
But they did rescue the dog, so that counts.
I think, and again, I think Brolin's gradual descent, had it been a different screenplay, would have worked better. But I thought he did a really good job with what he had to do.
He did, but let me tell you, whoever did the makeup on him should be fired, because way too much white, way too much eyeliner. He looks like he's in Rocky Horror Picture Show or something.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's like, of course he's possessed because he's got white makeup.
Yeah. There's a few scenes where, you know, you're saying, George, is something wrong? No, you would go, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah. Just nuts. Look at his face compared to Rod Steiger's face. You know, there's no comparison. He just looks... He's got too much red and too much black on those eyelids.
Well, yeah. And it heavily made up the wrong way. It just didn't work.
Right. No. Any other scenes before we move on to cast?
I think that's it.
I think I teased early when we started this that I felt like we went in descending order as far as the movies going toward Christmas. And to me, this is the worst of the three haunted holiday movies that we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, folks.
Details.
But I knew it was the most popular, so that's why I saved it for Christmas.
Yeah.
It stars James Brolin. We know him from Capricorn One, Marcus Welby. And, of course, on our podcast, the last thing I think we did with him was Westworld, the original. Mm-hmm. I fondly refer to him as Mr. Streisand because he's married to Barbara, and I'm a big fan of hers. But Harrison Ford was in consideration for this role. Did you know that?
In 79? Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
If you look at a picture of Ronald DeFeo, I don't see how they could have not cast Brolin. He looks almost exactly like him. It is creepy. It is creepy.
Well, they should have remade it with Josh Brolin instead of Ryan Reynolds then, because Josh looks like his dad.
Yeah.
That's funny. Anyway, Harrison Ford was considered, obviously, because Star Wars took off in 1977. However, other people that were considered, very, very predictable, Burt Reynolds, James Caan, and Christopher Reeve. Now, I could see Christopher Reeve doing it, but the other two, no.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Because the movie was made on a relatively modest budget, Brolin took less money up front with a promise of 10% of the gross sales after its release. Now, you heard me say this movie made $86 million.
Yep, I bet he was really happy at the end of that.
He didn't have to work again, probably, if he didn't want to.
He came home and went, honey, you don't have to make another album.
I've got that he eventually received $17 million. If you adjust it for inflation, it would be equal to $63.5 million now. That's a lot of moolah.
Yeah.
Did you know that he screen tested for the role of James Bond? I did not know that.
No. I could understand it at the time. Yeah, I could see him doing that in the late 70s.
It was for Octopussy, and Roger Moore agreed to come back, which ruled him out. So that's why he didn't do that. So anyway, I don't know if he would have got cast anyway, but because he's not very British.
No.
He plays George Lutz in this. Margot Kidder plays Kathy Lutz. Margot Kidder, we've had a little bit of a history with. She was in a movie I'm very familiar with that should have been on this Haunted Holidays, Black Christmas. And it will eventually show up, I'm sure, in one of our episodes. But we recently saw her in Superman, as well as a few seasons back when we did Sisters, the Brian De Palma movie.
Yeah.
I like Margot Kidder a lot. She's got a little bit of a reputation because she kind of lost it for a while.
She had, was it substance abuse or mental illness?
I think it was a combination.
Mm. Okay.
Hang on and I will tell you. Well, she was cast on in this movie because of her, you know, being in Superman. She was pretty much a star by then. James Brolin actually auditioned for Superman. I didn't know that. But Christopher Reeve, who played Superman, was considered for this. There's kind of a little bit of a flip there.
Yeah.
Like Brolin, Margot Kidder went on record saying she didn't believe the Amityville story either. She went on record with her friends that she hated the film. No surprise there, because I'm not a big fan of it either. In 1996, as she was preparing to write her autobiography, she began to become more and more paranoid. When her computer became infected with a virus, this gave her paranoia full rein, and she sank into bipolar disorder. She panicked, and the resulting psychological problems she created for herself resulted in her fantasizing that her first husband was going to kill her. So she left her home, faked her death, physically altering her appearance in the process. After an intervention took place, she got back on her feet, started the mental wellness campaign. Since then, she resumed her career in film, television, and theater. She died in 2018. So, yeah, she went off the road there for a while.
Okay, then.
Yeah. All right. But I think, like you said, it was a combination of mental and substance abuse. I'm pretty sure.
Sad, because she was really good.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Rod Steiger plays Father Delaney. We know him from In the Heat of the Night on the waterfront, but we have recently seen him on our podcast in movies like The Illustrated Man, the Ray Bradbury feature, and Mars Attacks, the Tim Burton movie we did a few back.
These are skin illustrations. Yeah.
That's hilarious. He had at the time been experiencing a career slump because he had an open heart surgery. Hmm. It left him depressed and made film studios hesitant to hire him due to high insurance costs. He, coming during an interview promoting the film, Steiger said, "This is my last maneuver in letting Hollywood know that I'm in good shape physically." So this was his comeback, I guess you would say.
Well, he did really good.
Do you know, I did not know this, unless I mentioned it when we did Illustrated Man, that he turned down the lead roles in both Patton and The Godfather?
No, I think I remember him turning down Patton. I think I remember that.
I could see him doing both of those easy.
Yeah.
He's essentially the school of Brando.
Yes, true. Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. They rubbed honey all over his head to draw those flies to him.
They did. That was a trivia, yeah.
And then Don Stroud plays Father Bolin. He's a very familiar 70s face. It's like if you think of 70s television, this guy was on Fantasy Island, The Love Boat, everything.
Everything. He was on it all. Yep.
But I've got that he was in The Buddy Holly Story, which was an Oscar movie, and Django Unchained, or Django Unchained. But those are really the only name movies I have of his that he was in. Murray Hamilton played Father Ryan. That's a very familiar face for you as far as character actors.
Well, yeah. Might as well. Speaking of Jaws, this is the fifth, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah. He was the mayor in Jaws, I think.
Yep.
But he was also in The Graduate and Anatomy of a Murder. I've got in parentheses, he has a very James Cameron-esque, or no, very James Karen-esque face. James Karen from Return of the Living Dead and Poltergeist. And they always played the same kind of characters, kind of Weasley.
Yeah. Yeah.
This film takes place in a small town of Amityville, which is ironic because Jaws was set in Amity.
Yep. Long Island. Yeah.
Right. Natasha Ryan plays the daughter, Amy. She was a kid actor only and stopped in 1983. However, while she was a kid, she was in The Entity and Kingdom of the Spiders.
There you go.
So that's pretty cool. Casey Martell was also a child actor. He was in E.T., Growing Pains. And then I guess he stopped, maybe. And the only other really familiar face in this is Michael Sacks, who plays Jeff, their friend.
Oh, yeah.
A friend of the family. He was in Sugarland Express, Spielberg's first movie, but we covered him in a movie that George Roy Hill did called Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut. He's a great actor, and I think we were puzzling why he hadn't done more when we covered Slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. But he just kind of faded away. Oh, you know what? Here it is. I have it in my notes. After movies, he had a long, successful career as a technology industry executive with positions on Morgan Stanley, Salomon Brothers, Inc., and IBM, thanks to his knowledge on computer science from Columbia University. So I guess he just said, fuck acting, and moved on to money.
Yep. to make a living. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as awards, this was nominated for an Oscar.
For what?
For score, original score. The scary child music.
Yep.
The only theatrically released Amityville film in the series nominated for an Academy Award, of course. That's obvious. Saturn Awards only gave it nominations for horror film and actress. Golden Globes also nominated the score. No wins at all, and it is not on the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list, which, no surprise.
Yeah, one trivia little thing, you had mentioned Arkov, because I think I had the same visceral reaction you did. When the credit came up, I went, really? This is Samuel Z. Arkov? But
I was like, where's Boris Karloff? Where's Jack Nicholson?
Right. That man has like over 200 credits in IMDb. And I think a lot of us, when we were growing up, wouldn't have known Poe if it hadn't been our cinema Poe, if it hadn't been for our coffee. He did so many.
Right. Well, him and Roger Corman. And that's the thing. It's not that we don't like Arkoff or AIP movies. We actually love them because we grew up with them. This just does not look like one. They're usually period pieces set in castles.
Right. Yeah. You got Dr. Fibes or something like that. And we didn't get that. Yeah.
No, it's not a modern house in Nantucket or wherever.
Yeah, Long Island. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was just looking at his titles, and there are all these ones that were like the drive-in movies that I remember. You know what I mean? Like Food of the Gods, Squirm, Tentacles, The Frogs, People That probably. Time Forgot.
Yeah.
You know, all of these movies that we remember because they were playing at every drive-in. But he did do Dressed to Kill. He was one of the producers of that. So that was
I didn't realize that. A
highbrow one. Sort of thing. But yeah, he had a very lucrative career, but only on the Roger Corman-esque sort of side of it, sort of thing. So
yeah. Yeah. I like him. I think of him fondly. I really do. And AIP Pictures. I just AIP never really associated him with this film. That's just weird to me. What else do I have? I have some trivia we could do.
Sure. I do too. So yeah, let's see how we do. Yeah.
In the 1981 nonfiction book by Stephen King, Dance Macabre, horror author Stephen King interprets the film as a parable on the anxieties of homeownership and financial ruin.
Yeah, I could see that.
He cites the economic crisis of the 1970s and the film's frequent references to financial matters, a reading which has similarly been assessed by other film scholars. He wrote, "The Amityville Horror beneath its ghost story exterior is really a financial demolition derby."
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they hadn't lived together ever. They had been married for, I think, a year or something like that. But this was their first home together and first time they were really, from what one biography or one documentary I watched said that they actually maintained two households until they bought this house. So she and the kids basically stayed at her place. He would come visit. She would come visit him every now and then at his place.
Okay.
But they never lived, cohabitated until they went here. And there's a lot of thinking that they, you know, one of those, like a young couple realizing that they shouldn't live together at all. Sort of thing. So that was in there in trivia that I saw. I also have trivia notes that says there is no babysitter in the book. And that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. I didn't mention it earlier. I'd forgotten it, but.
Oh, yeah. She gets locked in the closet.
Yeah. Yeah. Jody traps her in the closet and she actually bloodies her hands trying to get out.
Trying to beat the door down. And yeah. The little girl doesn't help her. And Kathy yells at the little girl when they get home. Why didn't you let her out?
Yeah.
And that's not in the book.
That is not in the book. No, there's no babysitter in the book.
Okay.
I also have that in the book, it says that the land was originally a Native American tribal hospital where they would take a lot of their wounded to die.
Okay.
But in the movie, it is rumored that it is a burial ground and also was previously the house of a satanic worshiper. So, yeah, there's that.
Okay. I was trying to think of a key there. I've got Pet Cemetery, but I don't know about Satanic Worshippers. Okay. I'm sure there is one, but I've got that the critics tore this movie apart.
Yes.
And I just wrote down some short phrases. One is dreary and terminally depressing. Mm-hmm. One is there's nothing here. One is ridiculous, and one is so many horror movie cliches have been assembled under the roof of a single haunted house, and then dull and disappointing.
Oh,
that would be me. And lastly, isn't even scary.
There you go. That would be us too.
Yeah.
My last trivia is another book reference, which is in Rod Steiger's character in the movie is Father Delaney. Oh, and by the way, there's another because the aunt or the sister comes too, and she's a nun.
Yes.
Is in the movie. But
there's a lot of clergy in this book, in this movie. There's like three priests and a nun.
Yeah, you got to tie it to the church for the exorcist sort of thing. But in the novel, it's not Father Delaney. It's Father Mancuso is his name. And he said that he never heard a voice say, get out, even though the actual father who was interviewed after the book came out and everything else, but that he did suffer blisters on his hands, nausea, and all of that. But in the book, he recovers and gets better. Mm-hmm. In the novel, the movie, actually not. He ends up being a vegetable sitting on a bench sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. I do remember that in the book that he recovered. It just took some time.
Right. Took him a few years or whatever to come out of it. Yeah.
I mentioned all those negative reviews. That being said, since then, contemporary film scholars have considered the film a classic of the horror genre, and it's widely regarded as a seminal entry in the subgenre of contemporary haunted house films, which is one of the reasons why I have it on here, because it does have a notoriety, even though it's not very good.
Yeah. But it won't be anything like the ones that we're going to mention in Keys, which are so much better. Sort of thing, as far as haunted house movies go. And some of them we've been missing for the past 2 weeks, but it's still the same thing.
It's the same thing. So. The haunting, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I think as keys and as influences, you have to mention whatever the actual event was. So whatever actually happened to the Lutzes, and no matter what it, and even for that token, to DeFeo before them, and whatever that influence did that ended up permeating this book, which made it such a sensation. So that's definitely a key influence on that. And then the book, of course, influencing this movie so much so that, you know, 2 years later, we have to do the movie adaptation and it becomes this huge hit, even though critics hate it.
Yeah.
So.
Sorry, I was just writing down another key. Do you want to start with any haunted house films?
Well, the one I'm going to do is like a dual tie-in, which is Conjuring.
Okay.
Because again, Conjuring is, it's about a haunted doll, but it's about the haunted house. And they cover haunted houses like they do Enfield. And I think in Conjuring 2, don't I remember that the very beginning of that, they're actually at the Amityville house? That's when they get the call about Enfield and go to England sort of thing. And they are the actual.
You're talking about Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yeah. And the actual investigators, the Warrens, actually do have a picture that is creepy as hell that was supposedly was taken at the Amityville house. Mm-hmm. That's that one upstairs with the stairwell on the left and the rooms on the right. And you see a little boy or girl's head peeking around from one of the bedrooms, and it's all in white eyes, like a cat's eyes, you know, that sort of thing. Very scary.
Like a doll's eyes.
Like a doll's eyes. Yeah. Black eyes. Yeah. But yeah, Conjuring. Definitely.
Okay. Well, I already mentioned The Haunting, and we've covered The Changeling, and so that's another haunted house movie. But one that I would say fits with this one would be The Innocents, because of the fact that the little girl actually communicates with the ghost in this, just like the kids in The Innocents do.
Well, I think that one goes into one of mine, which is Poltergeist, which is, you know, she is actually talking to the spirit. They're here sort of thing. So she's actually communicating just like the girl does with Jody.
Right. I hadn't even thought about it, but you're right. And it was only 3 years later.
Yeah. I think a key influence has to be The Exorcist. I think if it wasn't Arkoff, or it had to be the director or whomever, they were definitely influenced by The Exorcist when they were making this movie. And I think that's why you do see more clergy, and you do see the references to it, and try to make it religious, even though I don't remember, other than the father, I don't remember the book being that religious. It was more scary, poltergeisty kind of stuff in the house.
Right. They just have a priest as, you know, they bring a priest in and make him sick to show that the place is evil.
Right. And she had actually invited him because he was a family priest and he was going to bless the house because it was their first house together. Yeah.
Right. And yet they weren't there in the movie when he shows up, which I thought was kind of strange.
Yeah. They weren't awaiting him. No. You know?
Not
so much so. That was another thing that was weird about the way the screenplay is knocks on the door, doesn't get anybody, walks around yelling their name, doesn't get anybody, goes upstairs, doesn't see anybody, sees them outside getting in a boat and says, well, I guess I would just go ahead and bless it.
Yeah. Sure. I'm not going to waste my time.
What the heck? I got a busy schedule.
I said The Exorcist too because of the fact that there are so many priests and nuns in this movie, you know. Multiple priests. You mentioned In Cold Blood. I mentioned Pet Sematary because you said it was built on an Indian burial ground.
Yep.
I've got another good one that's a little more modern, and that's the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, why would you say Blair Witch?
Because of the fact that they said it was true.
Oh, yeah, based on true events.
That's how they sold the movie. That's how they sold this movie and the book. Yep. So, yeah, Blair Witch is a direct tie.
I think you got Hill House and Haunting of Hill House and Hell House itself. Both, again, we mentioned them before. They're both haunted house movies. I think Haunting of Hill House, especially because it begins with them fleeing this house. And the crawl at the beginning of this movie says, on this night, they left and never returned, blah, blah, blah. Then we do the whole movie like a flashback. And that's what the series was, too, is finding out what made them want to run away from this house sort of thing. So,
yeah, I didn't really even put that together. I put The Haunting from the book by Shirley Jackson, but you're right. The movie, The Haunting of Hill House, the series that Flanagan did ties in directly to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it has that kind of, we want to find out what scared them in just a month sort of thing.
Yeah. I've got all the sequels that this spawned.
Of course.
Not the ones that just use the name, but the actual sequels. There's Amityville 2, The Possession, which, if I'm not mistaken, is a prequel. I think it tells the DeFeo story.
Probably.
It's a sequel prequel is what they call it. Mm-hmm. Amityville 3D, which was awful. I remember going to see it because I was going to see all kinds of 3D movies at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Then the remake, The Amityville Horror of 2005. And then apparently there was one called Amityville The Awakening.
Ooh, that's when Annabelle shows up at the Amityville house.
No, it's 2017. I haven't heard of this, but it says it's not a traditional sequel, but a meta film taking place in a fictional real world where the original 79 film, its prequel, and the 2005 remake all exist.
Mm.
I've never, that's weird. That is very strange.
That is very strange. Mm. I also have another Exorcist tie-in, which is she has Captain Howdy that she talks to.
Yes.
In The Exorcist. And this girl has Jody.
Jody. So, yeah.
I've got It's a Wonderful Life because as he's going up the
Christmas.
Stairs. No, kind of it is a Chris. I should have saved that one for last. But as they're first going into the house when the agent is showing it to them, they're going up the steps, and he pulls the newel post ball off.
Oh,
and has
my
to
God,
put it
you're
back
right.
On. And that is so It's a Wonderful Life.
That George Bailey, put that back.
Put that back.
That's hilarious.
And if we want to go there, we also then have to go to Christmas Vacation because he comes in with a chainsaw and cuts his newel post off and goes, fix the staircase.
Oh, I'm not going to put Christmas Vacation.
No, you don't have to, but.
No. Oh, and I mentioned, and these are not keys, but that it said that there were 35 films that used the word Amityville in them.
Damn.
They're not sequels, not direct sequels, but.
Right.
Some, only those that I mentioned were. So that's all the keys I have. And I'm sure there's a ton more if you think about haunted house movies, but.
I have three. I have music-wise. Both Elm Street, because of the little kid's voice rhyme thing that makes mm-hmm. the movie even better and creepier, and Psycho, because the music is so important to the storytelling of the scare, and so is this. Even now, I hear this theme, I think of this movie, same way the Psycho's, strings do. I'm surprised you didn't say The Shining, because he does take an axe to the door trying to kill
God,
his family.
Right. You're right, yeah.
But then again, he turns around and almost axes his wife in the hand, sort of thing. And I have American Horror Story because of the black oil thing. When he comes out of that, he looks like the black oil latex thing in that first season.
It's not oil. It's just black latex.
Yeah. Whatever. That's what he looks like before he picks up the dog and runs away.
He looks more like the Tar Man in that Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, Return of the Living Dead.
The zombie. Yeah. It's just like black slime.
And lastly, of course, Eddie Murphy's joke about,
Oh, yeah. I don't really know how to reference that, but yeah.
Well, it was one of his, his big, staple jokes.
Get
was, out. Yeah. Honey, I love this place. It's beautiful. Get out. Too bad we can't stay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's funny.
But, so those are our keys, and that's what we think.
One other one.
Yeah.
You mentioned music, and I can't think of it, but there's another movie where it's like haunting child singing music. It's not The Omen. That's more orchestral. But it's another movie where you just hear children.
But The Omen has voices. Goes out, da da bum 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 da da da.
But it's not da, kids.
Da. Yeah, but it's a chorus. Yeah, but it's not kids. No.
Yeah, I can't think of what it is.
I don't know.
Though.
I can't think of another one with
it's not that,
right,
big
that comes
a deal.
To mind. If anybody out there thinks of it, what's another horror movie with children's voices in the song or in the music? Let us know. But that's our Christmas gift to you guys is these three movies we've done together, all with the theme of a haunted house sort of Christmas, a haunted Christmas.
Yeah, haunted.
And hopefully when we're going to take a little break just for the holidays. So we're going to spend it with our families. You spend it with yours and enjoy it. And we'll get back together at the first of the year and come back
and
with hopefully some science fiction-y kind of stuff.
January 12th, we're going to continue with a tradition that we started two seasons ago.
Yes. We are going to do a fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys will have to come back for that if you're new or if you're returning, whatever, come back and see us. Would love to hear what you guys think. Did you like Amityville Horror? Do you remember it when you were younger, or when was the first time you saw it? Let us know down below how it affected your life, this incredible sensation of a horror movie. And if you like what you've seen, look up our website, because there are plenty of other topics and titles and films that we've been doing over our 8 seasons. And you can find something you like and look back at it and see what we think and let us know. Comment, leave us, rate us, do all those good things we do. And for Tim and I think we want to say Merry Christmas to all of you and hope you have a great holiday. And Tim, I hope you have a great holiday.
Ho, ho, ho.
And I'll see you next year.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan.
All right, man.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.